Viewpoint on Mormonism, the program that examines the teachings of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints from a biblical perspective. Viewpoint on Mormonism is sponsored by Mormonism Research Ministry. Since 1979, Mormonism Research Ministry has been dedicated to equipping the body of Christ with answers regarding the Christian faith in a manner that expresses gentleness and respect. And now, your host for today's Viewpoint on Mormonism.
Our thanks to Adams Road Band for that musical introduction and to Brian Maines for that introduction. Welcome to this edition of Viewpoint on Mormonism. I'm your host, Bill McKeever, founder and director of Mormonism Research Ministry. With me today is Eric Johnson, my colleague at MRM. We are continuing our look into the Journal of Discourses, 26-volume set of sermons given by various leaders during the latter part of the 19th century, just kind of wanting to give you a little glimpse of what life was like in 19th century Utah. We've been looking at the Mormon doctrine of the Word of Wisdom, the Mormon health law, which primarily, if you were to ask most Latter-day Saints, speaks directly to the prohibition of alcohol, tobacco, and hot drinks, or coffee and tea as it's understood today. However, in the 19th century, it had a much broader application. And if you look back in the 19th century, you're going to find, for instance, that there were exceptions for using a cup of tea or wine. Now, Brigham Young gave this statement in April 7, 1867, on page 28 of volume 12. What did Brigham Young say there, Eric?
He said, "If a person is weary, worn out, cast down, fainting or dying, a brandy sling, a little wine, or a cup of tea is good to revive them. Do not throw these things away and say they must never be used. They are good to be used with judgment, prudence, and discretion. Ask our bishops if they drink tea every day, and in most cases they will tell you they do it if they can get it."
Ah, now, are we to assume that they're always having some type of sickness or malady that they need to take it? No, it doesn't sound like it in that context. You can definitely see then in the 19th century that the Word of Wisdom was not taken as seriously as it is today in a modern context. In that same volume, we have George Q. Cannon giving a talk on April 7, 1868. This is 1 year after Brigham Young made the statement that you just cited. What does he say?
This is on page 221. It says, "We are told, and very plainly too, that hot drinks, tea, coffee, chocolate, cocoa, and all drinks of this kind are not good for man."
Now, that's an interesting statement. Read that again.
I'm going to read it again.
"We are told, and very plainly too,
that hot drinks, tea, coffee, chocolate, cocoa, and all drinks of this kind are not good for man."
Okay, chocolate, cocoa. Now, I have a 1974 edition of Gospel Truth. This is volume 2. It's called The Discourses and Writings of President George Q. Cannon. It was compiled by Gerald L. Newquist. On page 177, this is what it says in this edition, Eric. It says, "We are told, and very plainly too, that hot drinks, tea, coffee, and all drinks of this kind."
Boy, they skipped a couple of words
they
there.
They skipped a few, didn't they?
Chocolate and cocoa.
Chocolate and cocoa is left out. Now, we know that Mormons don't usually have a problem with drinking hot chocolate.
They sell it at near Temple Square at Christmas time, and everybody has a cup of piping hot cocoa walking around. It's kind of interesting because it's a status symbol almost. It's not coffee, but it is hot chocolate.
And the interesting part, though, is the Word of Wisdom never says coffee, never says tea. It says hot drinks.
Right.
Now, the argument that is usually raised is, well, coffee and tea contain caffeine. And caffeine has always been the demon drug. In fact, if you look back in the Improvement Era, which was a magazine in the early 20th century, around 1918, 1919, up to 22, clear on up for years after that, there were a lot of sermons that were given. There were numerous sermons. I mean, percentage-wise, it probably wasn't all that much, but there were talks about caffeine use. And caffeine was considered like a demon drug. It was actually referred to as a poison and could cause serious health detriments if you were partaking of it. Now, the Mormon Church, as we know, just recently, there was an article in the September 1st, 2012 issue of the Salt Lake Tribune, an article by Peggy Fletcher Stack titled, "Mormon Caffeine Policy Clarified, Coke and Pepsi Officially Okay for Latter-day Saints." I find that interesting because during the 1918-19 up to the 30s, Coca-Cola was specifically mentioned by John Witzow, I know of. And he talked about the evils of partaking in Coca-Cola. And there's actually one talk in the Improvement Era, I believe it is, where this person who's writing this article, and I don't know who the individual is because I didn't see his name mentioned on a byline, but he says he calls himself this writer. And he talks about how he saw members of the LDS Church, both men and women, going into a store and going up to the counters, the soda water counter, I think is what he called it, and they were ordering Coca-Cola as if it was no big deal. And he was appalled. Why? What was the problem with this? Well, if you look back at the talks that were given and the articles that were written in that part of the century, it was because of the caffeine. They mentioned caffeine over and over and over again. But yet, if you talk to a lot of Mormons today, oh, no, it's not the caffeine. It's the temperature. It's the temperature of the liquid that's going to cause you harm.
Well, and that was an argument that was used in our book, Mormonism 101. There was a rebuttal that was done to it. And in that chapter on hot drinks, that was the reason they said, was because it would scald the esophagus is the problem with the hot drinks.
Yeah, well, certainly. And drinking Drano would cause problems, too. I mean, come on. I mean, how hot is this liquid? And how much of that hot liquid would you actually pour into your throat if you know it's going to cause pain like that? You probably wouldn't drink a lot of it anyway.
But, Bill, isn't cocoa and chocolate, isn't it considered to be hot as well?
It is hot. And not only that, but cocoa, as we understand it, I don't know about this kind they sell now that's mixed with water, but it actually has caffeine in it too. So there's a caffeine amount in chocolate. And if you eat a candy bar, it contains caffeine. So to say that it's not a problem now, we have to ask the question, well, why was it a problem years ago? I mean, we understood what caffeine was all about. It was a stimulant, still is a stimulant. There's not that much more, I don't think, that we've learned about caffeine that would probably, you know, well, maybe there is. Maybe now they realize, gee, we were wrong back in the early 20th century to make a big deal out of this, and now it's not all that serious. But if that's the case, why didn't God reveal that to these Latter-day prophets back then? Why did they not seem to get the memo?
And how do we know that today it really does only refer to tea and coffee? I mean, why are we still being allowed, why are Mormons allowed to drink cocoa and other drinks? If it's not about the caffeine, it's about the hotness of it.
I want to know why they're not even allowed to drink tea and coffee, because there's been several tests that have been done over the years to find that there's actually health benefits to drinking coffee and tea.
That's a good point.
Numerous articles that show that the dangers, if you will, of coffee and tea were not dangers at all, that there's actually some health benefits to it.
Well, it's all about moderation. And even like they say, a cup of wine or a glass of wine is actually supposed to be good for you on a regular basis.
I mean, Paul seemed to understand that. He told Timothy to have a small amount of wine for his stomach's sake. Now, naturally, they didn't have medicines that we have today that would certainly take the wine's place, but there was some medicinal content in there. But you know what I think, though, Eric? I think this is not anything to do with health issues at all. My personal opinion on this is all about control. If Joseph Smith could get people to give up their coffee and tea and their tobacco and things like that, he could get them to do just about anything.
What wouldn't they do for him?
What else? And if I was like a guy like Joseph Smith, who's looking for this power and this control over other people, using my position as a prophet, seer, and revelator over them, why wouldn't you do that? Why wouldn't you test them to see how far their loyalties will go? Now, certainly not all of them followed the word of wisdom. But remember, as we've been talking about, it was a mere suggestion in the early years. It was not by constraint. It was not by commandment. That didn't come about till later on. But I'm sure that there's probably a lot of Latter-day Saints out there, maybe even listening to us right now, that probably would agree that this is really a silly commandment. It's a silly commandment.
Listen to what else George Q. Cannon says on page 221. He writes, "We are also told that alcoholic drinks are not good and that tobacco, when either smoked or chewed, is an evil. We are told that swine's flesh is not good." So pork.
Okay.
And that we should dispense with it. And we are told that flesh of any kind is not suitable to man in the summertime and ought to be eaten sparingly in the winter. Isn't that what the Word of Wisdom said originally, DNC 89?
Exactly. But yet, do we find a lot of vegetarian Mormons during the summer months? Of course not. Now, I mean, they would probably argue that the refrigeration was a problem back then. But still, are we to assume that most people living during that time refrain from eating meat of any kind during the summer months?
And then on page 223, he adds this: we must not permit them to drink liquor or hot drinks or hot soups or to use tobacco or other articles that are injurious. So hot soups are included by George Q. Cannon on this.
What do you do with that? He was a member of the first presidency. Okay, you would think he has some kind of authority to speak on this subject. He is including hot soups. And remember, the Word of Wisdom says hot drinks.
Right.
A soup would be a hot drink.
There goes the chicken noodle when you don't feel well.
And I always thought that was the cure-all for everything, but I guess not. George Q. Cannon would have said that you were wrong in imbibing in.
Well, I wonder how many Latter-day Saints took him seriously back then. Obviously, I see lots of soup being eaten here in Utah, so I don't think Mormons today would hold to that. But I'm just wondering, you don't see that very often, but he included that. It would make sense if it's hot and it's going to injure your esophagus, then soup could be scalding and it could actually hurt you. I mean, everything has to be in moderation. You can't go to an extreme. Hot, how hot can it be?
Well, really, you'd think that the admonition would be, well, just let it cool off a little bit so you don't burn your esophagus. But that's not the admonition. And as we've seen, though, there's a lot of hypocrisy on this. There's a lot of mixed messages. And the Mormons really are not given a clear directive on what they should do with this. And they're not getting a very good example from the leadership, if you ask me. As we mentioned, Brigham Young admitted he wasn't good at keeping the Word of Wisdom, though he thought he was better than some, better than most, but there was not clear direction on this. Today, of course, the Mormon Church has pretty much codified everything, and they have certain requirements that a Mormon must do if they hope to not only get into the temple, but actually get into heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, it was Spencer Kimball who actually talked about what one cup of tea would actually keep you out of the celestial kingdom. Am I quoting that correctly?
Joseph Fielding Smith.
Was it Joseph Fielding Smith? But certainly there is a lot of inconsistency on this.
Thank you for listening. If you would like more information regarding Mormonism Research Ministry, we encourage you to visit our website at www.mrm.org, where you can request our free newsletter, Mormonism Researched. We hope you will join us again as we look at another viewpoint on Mormonism. Is there not much of a difference between Mormonism and Christianity? Well, actually, despite what many may think, there is. And when it comes to this sensitive and even highly charged issue that has eternal ramifications, the Christian may not know where to turn. Just trying to understand the Mormons' beliefs can be both confusing and frustrating. That's why Mormonism 101 was written, a book resource by Mormonism Research Ministries' Bill McKeever and Eric Johnson that contrasts vital doctrines such as who is God, what is Scripture, and how a person is able to go to heaven. When the two religions are placed side by side, the differences are many. Mormonism 101 is a tool that will help you better understand the doctrines of your Latter-day Saint friend, family member, or co-worker. And it even has witnessing tips available to help you in future conversations. Published by Baker Books, Mormonism 101 is available at mrm.org or ask for it at your favorite Christian bookstore. As 1 Peter 3 says, always be prepared to give an answer.